Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Today's episode is a two-parter. First, I spoke with Texarkana, Arkansas Mayor Alan Brown about the upcoming bond issue election. It's kind of a complex subject, but I think we got to some really good explanations of it for people. So if you're interested at all in that issue, I think you should give it a listen. Secondly, just in time for Halloween, you'll hear my interview with Texarkana native and horror author Robert Stahl about his debut short story collection. He was in town last month to give a reading. So there you go. Please enjoy this special double episode and happy Halloween. Mayor Alan Brown is back with us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Carl. Thanks. Thank you. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Busy October.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about regarding streets and creeks. There's a plan that you're bringing to the voters. But first, I wanted to sort of back up and just sort of talk about the problem in the first place. Streets need a lot of maintenance on the Arkansas side. I'm not sure people understand how expensive that is, and you got to come up with money some way. So,
right. Well, this is something that I certainly inherited along with every other previous mayors, and that is the revenue stream. If you had to sum it up, in my opinion, in maybe one statement, that would be our revenue stream certainly has not been able to stay up with our expense stream, so to speak. And meaning that we've got all these other things that come out of the general revenue fund, and your public works fund certainly doesn't generate enough revenue to maintain the streets that we have. And so when you can't maintain those streets to a good condition, they continue to deteriorate. And so what we've seen over the last several years, in my opinion, is we've seen with our street study, we've seen our critical street list grow because you cannot possibly go back and just keep pothole filling those streets to get in that situation. And it's all about revenue. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been a disconnect. And hopefully we can talk about this for a minute this morning, but there's probably been a disconnect between our citizens and the city and the city officials as to our responsibility in explaining to our citizens how much taxes you're paying and where those taxes are going. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of some misinformation that, you know, we misspend the city's money, we could be fixing streets and roads and quit potholing, and I think that people don't understand. And so I really started talking to the city maybe 2 years ago about trying to issue a bond, because with my background in the finance business, this is the only way. This is the only way, unless you see a substantial increase in your revenue, which I do not see, coming forth to the city over the next several years. This is the only way that you can try to remedy it and go do some substantial street work. Yes, it's going to cost more money, but we've also had this 2.5 mills on the table we could have been doing for quite some time. Mm-hmm. We've left it on the table and not been able to do it. But so we'll talk for a second about where the revenue, how we got to where we're getting now. And so there's a couple of numbers that I hope that when we continue to do our town hall meetings, and we'll be conducting some town hall meetings before our board meetings at 5 o'clock over the next three meetings before the election. And that is to try to explain this, is that all of our sales tax revenue that comes into the city in 2025 will be about, I'm going to round numbers, will be about $13.5 million. Mm-hmm. To put that in perspective, just our police and fire budget is over $16 million. So you are already
in a deficit
just with those two departments, mm-hmm. which we desperately need. You cannot function as a municipality without good police departments and a good fire department.
And those are the two biggest line items in the budget.
They are exactly the two biggest line items. Your property tax breakdown is when people pay in property taxes, in Arkansas, 68% of that goes to the school district, 11% goes to the county, and 21% of that goes to the city. Only 3% of the city's 21% is dedicated as a street tax. So only 3% of it.
3 cents on the dollar people are paying property tax goes to streets.
All right. So yeah. The city collects in 2025, anticipated, the city will collect $4 million in the street, in property tax revenue, $4 million in property tax revenue. Only $780,000 of that would be allocated to streets.
And people should know that that just doesn't go a long way, does it? I mean, it is so expensive to rebuild a street, isn't it?
It's very expensive. So here's the example. So let's just say that you have $160,000 assessed value for property tax value in Miller County. So you have 57.4 mills. So 57 mills goes. $400 of that, round numbers again, $1,900 goes to the city. $60 of that goes to the streets. Prior to 2024's reassessment of those street tax, we were only getting $10. So that revenue stream increased with 1.8 mills in 2024. So we just started 1 year getting that $60 instead of $10.
Right.
A substantial difference. That $10 is equivalent to a 2-inch wide strip of asphalt.
Right.
So I know that's a bunch of numbers, and I know that that's maybe sometimes it's hard to explain it when you're just talking about it. But when you have a $3 million deficit in your general revenue, your sales tax revenue stream already, just in two departments, and you don't have a supported tax base, meaning that our citizens, the taxes that they're paying, is still not cutting it, you're going to have issues on down the road. And this is something, again, that I knew this day was coming.
Yeah.
At some point in time in about 2020, as we continue to try to tackle our issues with streets and roads, because it's number one.
Yeah.
It's number one on everybody's list.
It's something people experience every day, and it's sort of perceived as sort of the baseline. Like the least you could do is keep the roads maintained, right? That's what people think.
That's true. But when you have 42 square miles of road and not enough money to do it, you've got to pick and choose on what you can do. Yeah. And that very simply is what the city has been trying to do through public works and our revenue through public works and our revenue through the general fund that we can put into there, that we've been able to prioritize those, again, based on the street study. And we talk about that here in a minute and why I support that street study wholeheartedly and how to go about prioritizing the streets that we did. Let's talk for just a second about the other expenditure breakdown of our revenue. So you have $20 million that goes to the personnel. Believe it or not, we still have several of our employees that are underpaid, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And we're still understaffed.
Yeah.
So you're not able to, we have some positions frozen. We have some different things going on in different departments but $20 million a year is going to go to your employees. We get spend $8.5 million in our contractual services, which is waste haulers, utility bills, and our technology that we have to do. And then here's another big one that I talk about, and people sometimes criticize me for talking about the airport. I think that the airport is an exceptional economic development opportunity. The problem that I had with it was in the beginning when this airport was being constructed with all the FAA money, in my opinion, I've never seen it. There was not a business plan that was put in place to, if we get this money, we get this thing built, how are we going to pay for it?
Right.
And now we're seeing the results of that, in my opinion. So when I first became mayor, at the end of 19, our deficit with the airport split from both sides in the old terminal, $200,000.
Yeah.
$100,000 each. We're both experiencing $1 million or more now in a deficit.
You mean both cities?
Both cities. Right. It's a $2 million deficit in the airport right now. That's a substantial hit to the Arkansas mm-hmm. side. And that's the only reason I'm pointing out. And again, I want to stress, I'm not against the airport.
Right.
But it is an expense now that the city has to bear.
And this, we're talking about debt service and matching funds.
We're basically talking about the running of it.
Okay,
We're talking about the running of that. There is some debt service on the solar panels. There's some mm-hmm. loans against that. There are things like that. But it's just running. Mm-hmm. You're increasing that. Mm-hmm. We've been working hard to get federal funding, to get the runway extended, to do some things at the airport, to put it in a position to be a better income producer. Mm-hmm. But we're behind.
Yeah.
And now you're paying for that going forward, and it's simply something that the cities have to pay.
Yeah.
We're not going to not pay it.
Right.
And we're not going to close it. So that is something that needs to be brought out. And I actually discussed this a couple of weeks ago with some people that they really had no idea that's what it was costing. And so that is a substantial hit on our side of town to the general fund revenues that we could be spending on streets and roads. We might could be hiring another public works crew or something.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That certainly is something. And that only leaves when we get through with, and we spend about $1 million a year in rehab, that only leaves about $2 million.
Right.
So
For everything else.
For everything else. And so you have a lot of variables that over the last several years have changed. And so how do you fix it? You look at a bond issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the only real way that I see. I know that there are some people that are talking about, well, we can do other things and we can do this. I would like to know what those are.
Right.
And how you can do it. And there's also the debt service. This is a point, and then we can get to some of your questions. The debt service and this comes from the street study, which is done by a very reputable company that does street studies all across the country.
Yeah,
it is, in my opinion, not a biased study.
Right.
They don't care what the who lives where or what. They don't care where the mayor lives or anything like that.
And they take out trucks and drive every street and take photos.
They take photos. They drone. Yeah. They do a number of things and put a cost analysis with it, et cetera, et cetera. And they have ranked these streets. Mm-hmm. So every street, for a resident to come to a town hall meeting and say, well, my street's not on this list, your street may not be on this top 58 list to spend this money on,
right.
But it's on the list.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that in a second as well. But in the street study figures, mm-hmm. it's round numbers again. It's about $6 million to maintain those streets in good condition annually.
As they are.
To get them up to par, if they were up to par, it would be $6 million. Right now it's about $6 million to get them drivable.
Right, right.
All right. We're spending about $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a $5 million deficit on an annual basis to fix the required streets that would need to be repaired on the street list as critical, et cetera, et cetera.
And they're getting worse all the time.
They're getting worse all the time because you're fixing them with potholes. So that's a key factor to me, because the key to the bond issue is in fixing those 58 streets that are on that list right now, we're going to bring that cost down. Because
mm-hmm.
we're not going to have that maintenance on those streets. These are rehab and these are new streets. Let's just call them new streets. These 58 projects we're doing within this bond issue, if it passes, are new streets.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to drive that annual cost down. And as long as we can keep driving that annual cost down, mm-hmm. it's more manageable within the city's current revenue to go fix some more. So if you'll pass this bond issue, let us go fix those 58 streets that the board has signed a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
We will spend the money on these 58 streets. If it's the last thing I ever do, we're going to spend that money on those streets. We're not going to divert this money to any other outside of the, there's, and we're going to talk about the ballot issue in a minute on the drainage, but we're going to spend that money on those 58 streets. And that will allow us to then go concentrate on our general fund revenues and our public works revenues on the streets below that. Mm-hmm. So just because your street is not on that list, we can continue to go down that list. We can stop concentrating, so to speak, on those streets on the 58 that are approved. If you'll approve this bond issue, we're going to have to go do some major things. If we have a big crater or a big washout or something like that, we'll have to go fix that.
Yeah.
But we will not be concentrating, in my opinion, on those 58 streets as much as how we start rolling over and trying to get these done. And we can talk about the time frame on that in a second. But we've got to drive the annual cost of the of fixing these streets down. And the only way you're going to do it is with an infusion of serious capital.
Right. And just to replace them, sort of get them out of the red, so to speak.
Yes.
In terms of maintenance. And then
drive that annual cost down so that it can become something more manageable with your budget.
Okay. So the election is necessary because you're going to be increasing the property tax rate if this goes through. So that's why people have to approve this at the polls.
Okay. So right now there is a maximum by state statute of 5 mills allowed per city, county for streets and roads. And right now our current tax rate is 2.5 mills. And that 2.5 mills is being used on a 2012 bond issue that did some street repair and some work associated with Crossroads Business Park.
Okay.
This is very important that the citizens understand this, that that 2.5 mills. So I try to explain it like this from a finance background where people can understand it. Mm-hmm. To borrow the 27 million rounding numbers that we're asking for the voters to approve in this bond issue, we have to pay off that 2 million.
Right.
So because it takes 5 mills to pay back the 27 mills over the 20-year period.
So you have to sort of clear some capacity in the property tax rate.
We've got to free up that 2.5 that we're paying on that 2012 bond issue. It's called repurposing. Mm-hmm. So in the bond election, the first question is yes, you want to support that because we're asking you to pay, to allow us to take 2 million of the 27 million and pay off that 2 million of the 2012. So that in sense frees up 2.5 mills. We're asking you to increase your tax rate by 2.5 mills so we can use the total of 5% to pay the 27 million back. So that leaves us 25 million in the bond issue. That gives $4 million to drainage issues that we'll talk about in a second, and the $21 million on the streets, which got us down our street study list to about 58 streets.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that drainage part. We're talking about Nix Creek and what was the other one, Jones?
Jones Creek.
Yeah, and they need to be dredged. They need to be shored up.
Mowed, clean.
Yeah, right. Just basically rehabbed.
Right. Drainage has been an issue with the city for quite some time. Mm-hmm. We've got evidently a lot of rain moving in over this weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I know when we have a lot of that rain moving in that our public works director, our city manager, they're all on edge as to, you know, where are we going to have issues again? Because the city, again, hasn't been able to maintain the revenue to keep those clean. Mm-hmm. My office is in Nix Creek, runs behind my Millway office there, and there are weeping willow trees, I call them, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 inches in diameter growing in that creek. So by the dredging and cleaning of this, and we get a lot of complaints about that, plus we get a lot of people that their backyards are on Nix Creek and they flood.
Yeah.
So in sense, when you say that, well, my street's not on the list and I'm not going to support this, we're going to give you some drainage help all across the city.
Yeah, yeah. That affects everybody. That,
and that's $4 million worth to clean and dredge those. We are not, we do not have enough money in that $4 and $5 million to stabilize those all those banks. We have some areas we know that are worse than others, mm-hmm. meaning we can do some stabilization and stuff as far as how the money goes. But the main thing is to get that thing dredged and clean. And more than likely, what I would assume if I was in charge, which I'm not at that time, I would spray it to try to keep the vegetation and stuff down. But it would also allow us, once we get it all done, to maintain it better. Yeah. We can do some mowing, we can do some spraying, we can do some number of things to keep that vegetation down so that we can allow more water in that creek to get to where it needs to go instead of in the back of somebody's patio or somewhere like that.
Yeah, again, it's sort of a reset where you can free up all that maintenance time and money that you're spending out.
Yeah. It is, and it's very important to me to do the drainage because that's something for all the citizens to support.
Yeah.
We need to get it done. And that is a big key factor, just like streets and roads are, the drainage is part of it. Because, you know, if you don't have adequate drainage, even on your streets and roads, it'll ruin your streets. So
yeah.
Water is your worst nightmare.
Right.
In any project, house project, things like that. So that is your, but it's very important. And so let's talk one more second about the bond. Okay. So there are three questions, the election, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There are three questions that you will be asked on November the 18th or early voting. The first one is to allow us to repurpose the 2.5 mills that we're already paying for, every citizen is paying for, to pay off $2 million of that 2012 bond so we can add that 2.5 mills to the 2.5 we're asking you to approve. That has to pass.
Yeah.
If that does not pass, we do no drainage. Even if the drainage passed overwhelmingly and the bond, street bond passes overwhelmingly, we can't do them.
Right.
We don't have enough money to pay it back.
Yeah.
The second question will be the drainage. So you're knowing that we're appropriating the $4 million to drainage, and then the next would be the $21 million. There is a difference in what you will see on the ballot initiative than what we're actually getting. Mm-hmm. So there's a $5 million figure on the ballot initiative for bond for drainage. Mm-hmm. There's a $49 million number on streets and roads. And why is that? That is the maximum based on property evaluations that we could ever get.
Right.
And so if you want to stay ahead of the game, we wouldn't, if we pass this, the city would have the option of doing future bond issues as the debt service becomes available.
Right.
Without going back to the voters, which means you're not going to pay any more mills than what you're currently paying, but it would allow the city to continue to go reap the benefits of this bond money.
Right.
As we go forward. An example of that, the 2012 bond that we're currently asking to be retired is already 7 years ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. So these bonds will pay off early.
Right.
The rates will change. There will we can talk in another second about the possibility of maybe getting down that street list from 58 in a minute. But as that money becomes available, and they pay off early, rates change, whatever the case may be, then the city can go get that money and put it right back into the streets. Yeah. It has to go into the streets and drainage is what it was intended for.
And it's pretty much the norm that it's bonds get refinanced all the time, right?
It saves you on the possibility, one, of having another election and an election expense. You know, we're having to pay for this election process. But it allows you to stay on top of that without increasing that millage to that.
Yeah.
One quick point about property taxes and values. So in a town hall meeting already, there were some things brought up about you're already raising our taxes on our property values and all that. First of all, city doesn't do that.
Right. That's okay? County.
That's the county. That's my understanding. I believe it's every 3 years they do a reappraisal everybody is going to be subject to additional taxes.
Right.
We all are. So that has nothing to do with the city. We're asking you to raise 2.5 mills to go to streets and drainage issues. So that has nothing to do with that. And that's going to continue to occur. So your property values and your property taxes are going to continue to increase over time. Those usually, in my opinion, are not substantial increases.
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of like this is what I would consider. It's not substantial. It's $50 for every $100,000 you have on the appraised value right now.
Per year.
Per year.
Right.
Not less, more
less
per
than
month,
a dollar a week.
Per year. Yeah. Per year. It's a good point. It is per year. There have been some questions about people that are over 65 and their values are frozen.
Right.
So your assessed value is frozen at its current value now with Miller County. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't increase your value of that home by 25%, that assessed value amount never changes.
Right.
But you will see an increase in this 2.5%.
Right.
You're going to pay 2.5% more on that value, but your value will never change as long as you don't increase your property value.
Right.
So I can just reiterate that this millage, this 2.5% increase, is $50 for every $100,000, and the tax increase on a $200,000 house would be $100.
Yeah.
That equates to about $2.50 for every $1,000 of assessed value. And the $300,000 would be $175,000. So everybody can kind of do the math as to how that would take care, how that would take place on your new tax statement. And let's talk about this. If this passes, this will not even be reflected in your tax bill until 2027.
Okay.
So if we pass these millage, it goes into effect at January of 2025. Mm-hmm. So you're a year behind. And
I'm 26.
This is 25. It would go in 2026. You would not see that on your tax bill until October of 2027. That's when you would actually see the increase that you would have to pay. And let's talk about comparisons for a second. Texas property tax is expressed as a percentage. Arkansas taxes are expressed by mills, 20% value. Mm-hmm. Assessed value equals 20% of your total value. Your property tax calculation is the 20% is how they get your 20% millage rate. So one mill is one of 1,000. Mm-hmm. The Texas side property tax rate is 2.39%, 0.65% city. Our tax rate is 1.15%, with a city of 0.24%. So with 2.5 mil increase, our property tax rate, what does all that mean? It's a lot of numbers and all that. What does all that mean? With a 2.5% millage increase, our property tax rate is still half.
Of the Texas side.
Yeah. So, I'm just throwing that out there because people always say, well, they got this, they got that, and they're doing all these road repairs and they're doing all this kind of stuff. Their sales tax revenue generation, anticipated revenue generation for 2025 is more than our general fund budget.
Right.
And you've got to go look at some of the reasons that's why. Retail is a humongous part of it, and the double in your property tax rate is the other.
Yeah.
And so that is something that is certainly not comparing apples to apples, but yet we've still tried over all these years to compete with them.
Yeah.
And it's catching up with you.
So long-term economic development is the real answer. We need more retail on the Arkansas side. We need higher assessments on better homes and so forth.
Right.
So I know that's something that's been on your mind since you took office.
You know, we work every day in economic development. Rob Sitterly and the Redwood Group does a great job for Texarkana. Not Arkansas, not Texas, not Miller, not Bowie, but for Texarkana. And, you know, one of the first things that I did as mayor is came up with a way and developed a way to buy some economic development property. And we have the largest, if not the largest, industrial development site in the state of Arkansas. Gets looks every day.
Yeah.
Looks every day. But it's just, we're in a tough time to be trying to expand industrially. And then right. We went through COVID. So we have a number of things, but that asset is still there.
Yeah.
And it's still being marketed. Well, what is that going to do? It's going to bring jobs to Texarkana. When it brings jobs to Texarkana, it's going to bring housing. It's going to bring property tax revenue. Potentially, with that many more people moving to town, could help spur retail.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what we don't have. You've got to have that landmark, that's the way I look at it. You've got to have that landmark retail shop, land at Crossroads Business Park or something, then ever let everything else fall in afterwards.
Yeah.
But we don't have a very good track record of retail. We don't have as much property frontage on Interstate 30 as the Texas side does, where everybody locates.
Yeah.
So there are some disadvantages to that as well. And people talk about, well, our tax rate's too high. It's 10.5. There's 8.5. Those taxes, those A&P fund taxes and all those types of things are paid for by the customer.
Right.
They're not paid for by the actual business. They're paid for by the customer. So if you have a great business and you have a Logan Steakhouse or something like that, and people don't really look at their tab. They go there to eat.
Right.
Likewise with Pop's Place on our side and used to be Park Place Restaurant, those types of stuff. So that tax is an A&P tax that we utilize for other things, but it's paid for by the customer. It's not paid for by the merchant. And let's talk about something real quick about taxes. I think a lot of people on our side of town also lose focus when we talk about raising taxes and city taxes and paying A&P taxes and all those types of things. We have a border city exemption.
Right.
So people that live inside the city limits of Texarkana, Arkansas do not pay state income tax. That's a substantial difference for every household.
Yeah.
Inside the city limits, okay? So by having that border city exemption, one thing people don't understand either, we give up 1% of our sales tax revenue collected to the state before they ever send it to us.
Right.
We give that up.
Because of the border
exemption. To have the border city exemption.
Right,
so there are some conditions that we have to maintain to keep that. Mm-hmm. We pay 1% additional when you buy a vehicle, sales tax, that type of stuff. So they're taking that 1% off the top before we ever even get it.
Yeah.
So there are a number of advantages to that. So if you lose your border city exemption or you didn't have your border city exemption, then you're immediately going to be paying that much more per month in state taxes. And we lose focus of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to keep that thought in mind that that's another reason that 1% is being withheld. And that's another reason that we could all maybe sacrifice just a little bit more to see the improvements that we need with our streets and roads and drainage.
You mentioned one town hall. What are you hearing from people? What do people have to say about this?
Unfortunately, I was not at the board meet Monday night. We had a meeting there. There were four or five people there that came. I think the common question was, my street's not on the list. Why should I support it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they left with a better understanding of one. My goal with the town hall meetings and Tyler's goal with the town hall meetings, one is to be transparent, mm-hmm. is to let people know we're not wasting your money. This is where the money's going, and this is why this will never work if we don't see an infusion of capital into our streets and roads and drainage issues. My take is, one, we're going to do a lot of drainage that's going to help the entire city. And just because your street is not on the top 58 streets that are on this list, there are a couple of things that are going to happen. One is we could end up, by the time we get ready to actually physically issue the bonds, with more money,
mm-hmm.
depending on what the debt service is on the current, if this passes, what the current debt service is on the $2 million we're trying to pay off, plus what the rate is at that time. And then, so that's going to free up some more money. The second thing is we have probably configured all of these projects through engineering at a high rate. Mm-hmm. So that meaning that if we have $200,000 figured for your streets and we can do it for $150,000, that frees up $50,000. So as you go down this list, we could free up additional funds. And then the third thing is that I pledged this at the press conference that day, and I will do it. And that is to understanding how bonds are issued. We will get all of this money up front.
Right.
So we immediately will take the $2 million, go pay off the 2012 bond issue. And then we will not be needing that money for a period of time.
Right.
Because that's for drainage, that's for streets and roads. And so that money is going to sit there. And we can work and will work on an investment strategy that invests this money over a staggered period of time. Mm-hmm. That as we need the money, we'll have it available. But as we don't need it, we're earning interest on it. So we'll have interest on this money. We could generate another $400,000 or $500,000 over the period of time in which these projects take to complete. We can generate that revenue and get down that list to maybe 63, 64, 65.
And as you were saying earlier, repairing these streets will free up maintenance costs that will trickle down to other streets.
Sure. Once all this is the way that I would do it, and Tyler and I really haven't spent a lot of time talking about this, but let's just say on the list we've proposed right now is 58 streets. Mm-hmm. And once all the dust settles on everything, we're going to go see exactly how much money we've got. So if we go pick up 5, 6, 7 more streets, that's fine. Then we're going to start working on our public works money and our general fund revenue money we can transfer into public works for streets and roads. We're going to start working on those streets below that.
Right.
And try to get your critical and those types of things. So it's an ongoing process. But if I can reiterate anything today, this is about driving the cost of those streets, the annual maintenance of those streets down. Mm-hmm. You have got to get that down to where it's more manageable in your budget. You're not going to get there totally to where you're generating enough revenue at this mm-hmm. time to do it, but you can get closer, and you will not have streets that get in very critical condition and have to go spend a ton of money on it. Yeah. I mean, that's where you're at right now. And I use this example because I think this is it's a good example, and I think that people can understand that. Several years ago, we were involved in a project. My wife and I were as members of the TASD Athletic Foundation. The school district renovated the stadium. Mm-hmm. The stadium had not had anything done to it since it was built in 1971.
Right.
All right. And it hadn't had anything done to it but paint.
Right.
A few structural things and paint. So all these years, you've just thrown some paint on it, made it look a little better. Mm-hmm. You've done some work on the field and all that kind of stuff. And as all of those years progressed and you weren't dumping any money in there, you weren't doing permanent maintenance on it, by the time it got ready to really do something to fix it, it was 10 times what it should have cost.
Right.
Same thing with your house. You can't go 50 years without a roof. You just can't do it.
Right.
But if you go that long, you know, and try to do it, then it's going to cost you a lot more money when you do it.
And that's the prevention.
And this is the same example, in my opinion, with the streets and roads, is that we have got to get that annual cost of maintaining those streets down so that we can keep them going. And if you don't, then you're just going to continue to add streets to your critical list. And when you add a street to your critical list, you pretty much potholes is not fixing it.
Right, right.
And so we've got to pass this bond issue to be able to take that burden of those critical streets off that list to maintain, to get our maintenance down on the overall cost of that to do it. But I think that's the most common thing is my street's not on the list. Why should I support it? And that's the reason.
Yeah.
The reason is to help us get to your street quicker.
Right.
And then the other thing, let's talk about this for a second when I said the word quicker. I'm just guessing, and I'm going to say Tyler would be, we briefly discussed this and talked about this, this is probably a 2 year or longer project.
Right, which seems short to
me. It seems short, but soon as November 18th passes, mm-hmm. and this passes, and I hope and pray it passes.
Right.
If it passes, then we can immediately start bidding out these roads, getting the engineering studies done, doing the things that we need to be doing behind the scenes. The bond attorney that works for us and the Stevens firm that will be issuing the bonds anticipates we will not even have the money until April. So once you go through the bond process, the issuance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we would not actually see the deposit of those funds until April. Mm-hmm. So if we could get started in January, December or January, bidding these streets, getting our engineering studies done on these streets, analyze them to see exactly what needs to be done, and then bidding those streets out, then we could be ready to roll next end of the spring, maybe early summer of next year to start these streets. And then these streets won't necessarily be done from 1 to 58 because some of these companies we know will bid these streets by proximity.
Okay.
Which means if I'm right here and the next street's two blocks over, you know, I'm going to bid both of those streets so I can just move right over there.
Yeah.
So all of that has to be worked out. But my point is that when we pass that, that street may not be done until 2027.
Right.
It could be the early part of 2027. You have weather. I mean, we can get started on the drainage ASAP.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to have to be bid out. But we could get started on the drainage ASAP as soon as we get all of our legal work done and bidding process done. But it could be 2027 before you actually see mm-hmm. you know, those streets done, but you have weather,
right?
You know, have a number of things that do it, but
and who knows what's going to happen in the economy with supply chains, whatever.
Who knows? And but my point is again, and I was one that really wanted this, and that is, we have passed a resolution, and this is the money, and this is where the money would go. And that street study is attached to that resolution by mm-hmm. this board of directors. And we can continue to move down that list as funds become available in this particular situation, as I've indicated, with interest on the money, additional bond money that could become available based on debt service at the present time. We'll continue to use that street study to do it.
Does the city prioritize local contractors in considering bids? I'm just thinking, if someone local is doing the work, this money is going to be going back into the local economy.
We do have, I'm aware of at least two or three mm-hmm. that do a lot of our local stuff, and I'm assuming they would be bidding. Mm. Whether they could tackle something of this magnitude or whatever, I don't know. That would be probably a better question for Tyler to answer, but I mean, I'm a big supporter of I know we have a great relationship with a couple of contractors here that do really good work. So that's another opportunity for us to, stimulate your own economy with that. But I would say that everybody that has an opportunity to bid that's qualified can do it. But I don't know that they can do all of this. We may have to have an outside, bidder do it.
What else do you want people to know? It's a lot of information.
You have an opportunity for your voice to be heard at these town hall meetings, and you have an opportunity to make a difference. Mm-hmm. How are you going to make a difference? You're going to have to support it. You just need to understand that we all pay taxes, and we just – the way that taxes are allocated at the present time, it just hasn't been enough. It hasn't been enough to maintain the status of what we have. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to compare it to your own household. When you're making the same thing that you were making 5 or 6 years ago, you can't even buy a carton of eggs today.
Right.
All right. So this is the same situation, and this is all public record. This is not something that I'm making up, that the city's making up, mm-hmm. or anything like that. But when you see the revenue of the city over the last 5 years in your sales tax collection, your franchise fees, and those types of property tax revenue, it is flatline. Mm. It is not increasing.
Yeah.
Okay. The only substantial increase that we've had is the increase in the property tax revenue from the county when that took place in 2024. So the allocation of that. So when you see that, it's the same. It can relate to you as an individual and a citizen.
Yeah.
That's the same shape that the city's in. And when you go look at the Texas side, all you really have seen is a increase in those revenues all the time.
Right.
And so, and it's not, doesn't take Einstein to figure out when you drive over there, why.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Right.
And it's not going to get any better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not going to, you're not going to see the substantial increase in that revenue.
Even if some big manufacturer opened a new business here, that would take years. And
be 3 to 5 years. It would be 3 to 5 years to, you know, the go back to the expense of the airport is if we had had, this is just my opinion and my opinion only, can take it for whatever it's worth. If we had started planning back when we accepted the FAA grant money to build a new terminal, if we had started planning then where we're at today, we could have possibly had the runway already extended. We could have had a number of things done so that that burden of that debt, that's the expense of that airport, wouldn't be so detrimental to you. But now we're behind the eight ball. We're still another 2 or 3 years away, in my opinion, from maybe even completing the runway extension.
Right.
To have a manufacturer we're working with to come in that says they will, but you got to be able to land a bigger plane. So we, and thank goodness for the state of Arkansas and the state of Texas and the FAA with this grant money that certainly helped. But we, I will point out too, is we as the cities, we have some matching money that we've got to put up in the very near future. To be able to support those grants that we're getting from them to finish those projects. But this is what we're, this is what I'm trying to do right now. If we can pass this bond issue, we're planning for the future. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get our debt service down on what it takes to maintain these roads. And we're working on the economic development side. But like you said, if we even get a 3,000 employment manufacturer right now at $60,000 a year, it'd be 3 to 5 years before those people even get located here and get to in their homes and paying property tax revenues. So there's that windfall, but it's a start.
Yeah.
It's a start, but you're not going to get there under our present revenue stream and fixing these streets that some of them are in horrible condition.
There's just not enough money.
Not enough. One thing we will mention is we've got today is the 23rd. We do have a town hall meeting tonight for Ward 3. I'm not sure when you're going to air this. I'm sorry. But the Iron Mountain Center, we have one Tuesday, the 28th. That's the Ward 4 town hall meeting. That'll be at the Rec Center on Legion Drive. And then Thursday, we have Thursday the 30th, next Thursday, we have a Ward 6 town hall meeting at Sugar Hill Church. And then there's an opportunity at 5 o'clock before the next board meeting, which is the 3rd of November. Then we have the last town hall meeting on Thursday, November the 6th. And then November the 12th, early voting starts. And that's going to be at the American Legion here downtown. And then the election will actually be all day. It's six polling places on the 18th.
So this is sort of a sprint, sort of 3 week campaign. I saw that list, I think, on the city's Facebook page, and it's probably on the website too.
Yeah, yeah, so I'll double check that, when I leave here this morning, but it should be on our website and our Facebook page. But you know, just
and this election is open to city residents, correct?
City inside the city limits.
Okay, yeah, that's
you have to be inside the city limits. And like I said, we've consolidated that for our voters' purposes too, but for, you know, we do have the expense of the election. So we've consolidated those precincts down to, I believe, six precincts. Mm-hmm. You have an opportunity to listen to this podcast. You have an opportunity to attend our next one or two board meetings, these town hall meetings. Please get out, voice your concerns. Let us try to answer your questions, and let us continue to try to express to you why this is important that this passes. And this would be great for the future of our city on our side of town. And again, by passing this, we also free up the ability to stay on top of this by being able to use that same rate and continue to get additional bond money in the future to do it.
Well, we'll be watching and covering it all and publishing all that information so people know exactly when and where and how they can vote.
Okay.
So I really appreciate you spending some time today.
Carl, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, keep my fingers crossed. One thing I just occurred to me, what if they passed the first question and only one of the two other ones?
You can repurpose one or the other two. The way the ballot initiative is read, we could actually, if just the drainage issues, if the city so desired, we could take some of that money if we had to and go fix a couple of critical streets, depending on what the drainage bids and stuff come in were and all that. But and then if the street just passes, then we could go use some of that money based on how that is to do some drainage issues if we had to.
Okay.
We know of some drainage issues that are going to have to be fixed that deal with some of the streets that's on the top 58,
right,
which means we need to go fix some culverts and stuff before we ever even fix that street.
Right.
So we know, and that's kind of hopefully that's kind of factored into the rehab of mm-hmm. the street. But we can flip-flop and move some stuff around to address the critical needs, but we need to pass both of them.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
All right.
Hi, Robert. Welcome home.
Good morning, Carl. Thank you for having me here today.
I'm very excited to meet you. Tell me about you in Texarkana. Were you born here?
Yeah, sure. I was born in Texarkana many, many years ago, actually in a little community called Wamba, Texas.
Right.
So growing up in Wamba, it's pretty much out there in the woods, you know, a lot of spooky stuff going on at night.
Nice.
Just being a kid out in the big outdoors certainly gave me a lot of inspiration for a lot of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm from Texarkana, born and bred.
Excellent. When did you leave Texarkana?
I left in my 20s, so I've been in Dallas ever since. So yeah, just in my 20s. I love Texarkana. I'm an out person, and I felt it a little constricting to be here. So I certainly felt a little more in my own skin in Dallas.
And you still have family here?
Yeah, I still have a pretty big family here that I come back and see pretty regularly. I'm staying with them right now, and I hope that most of them come to my signing today. You better come to my signing today, family.
Yeah, unfortunately, it will be in the past by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
So we're here mostly to talk about your book. Tell us about it. It's Show Me Where It Hurts.
Yeah, the book is called Show Me Where It Hurts.
A couple of times I typed tell me, and then I had to double check. But
yeah,
show me.
It's called Show Me Where It Hurts. So I've been writing about 12 to 15 years pretty seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Writing was a passion I always had as a kid, but I never followed through with it.
Yeah.
So I was getting into my 30s, and I was like, wait, if I don't start writing, I'm going to die without even having tried. So I finally got the gumption together to start writing. It took me several years to kind of get the flow down. I was writing stuff that wasn't going anywhere, but I started getting really serious about it and writing short stories. Mm-hmm. So I started sending short stories out, and, you know, same old thing, rejections, rejections, rejections. And finally, I started making some headway. So I just kept taking classes. I kept meeting other writers and learning how to get better. And before I knew it, I had a wealth of stories under my belt. And I finally got them all together and into a collection. And I sent it out for about a year. I sent it out and didn't get any yeses. And I finally connected with the right publisher, Journalstone, who liked the work and finally decided to publish it.
Yeah. So can you characterize your work? You have to forgive me. I haven't had a chance to read any of the book yet.
No, that's okay.
What would you generally say to describe what you're doing?
Sure. Well, the book itself is a mixed bag. It's horror, but it's a mix of horror. So it's not all blood and guts, slashy stuff. There's mm-hmm. some psychological stuff in there. There's just some weird fiction in there with just like weird situations, weird musings about life. So it's not all just ghosts and goblins and things like that.
Right.
Yeah. So as far as influencing me, of course, the big one, Stephen King, is someone mm-hmm. who I read growing up. Clive Barker was also a hero of mine. And over the years, I came to appreciate Jack Ketchum mm-hmm. and Stephen Graham Jones. These are all phenomenal writers. Once I finished the collection and got it in front of someone else's hands, a writer that I really admire named Richard Thomas, who writes some really dark, transgressive horror, kind of compared me to a cross between Grady Hendrix, who's kind of an up-and-coming horror writer, Chuck Palahniuk, who's a transgressive, not horror writer, but just weird fiction writer, and also Clive Barker, who was one of my inspirations growing up. So that mm-hmm. was a real delight to hear that.
What attracts you to the horror genre? This is something we fans hear a lot, and I'm not sure I can even explain it very well myself, but what would you say?
Yeah. To me, it's just the thrill of the unknown. I like all kinds of fiction. I read all the way across the board, but I've always gravitated toward horror. Mm-hmm. And I try to explain it to people that it's just a genre that gives you a thrill. Like when you read a scary story, your heart starts to race a little bit.
It's, and it's arousing in the general sense
of
the word.
It's arousing in a terrifying sense.
Yeah.
So you come out of a scary story feeling different, feeling energized, like you survived an experience. And to me, it's kind of an addictive thing. Mm-hmm. Once you start with a small scare, you're always looking for the next bigger scare. And that can take you to some really weird places.
Right.
So like, you know, eventually once you've been through that so long, what's going to scare you? So that's kind of been my journey. And once I started writing, I knew that I wanted to pay tribute to the genre that really inspired me. So that's why I'm a horror writer.
Excellent. So I gathered just from your website that this book means more to you than just a publication. It's sort of a touchstone in your personal journey. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's probably no secret that I've been through a really dark period of in my early adulthood, probably late teens to early adulthood, just struggling with a lot of things, going down some roads I didn't need to be going down. And I went through a really dark patch. Mm. And it was either basically go to therapy and start dealing with it that way or start writing.
Yeah.
So I kind of used writing as a form of therapy. Mm-hmm. And so I just started pouring aspects of myself into these stories because it was a way to manage these situations. So essentially, all of these short stories are kind of a way of me purging these dark emotions into a form that I could manage. And so, yeah, those kind of came together to become this book. So this book means a lot to me because it's kind of a way of me purging those emotions and dealing with some of that darkness that was in my past.
What do you feel this book prepared you to do next?
Oh, definitely to keep going. I've had a lot of times where I've felt like giving up. Sometimes I write kind of sporadically and I tend to stop believing in myself, but this has definitely given me the forward momentum to keep going. And I was telling someone the other day, they asked me what's next. And I said, I think I have enough stories almost for another collection, maybe about half full, but I'd like to do longer form works. I've dabbled in script writing, so I'd like to do possibly a full-length screenplay.
Yeah.
Just recently, I was experimenting with a comic book form.
Oh, cool.
So I wrote an 8-page comic book script based on one of the stories in the collection. So I just want to keep at it, man. And it's my life goal is to be able to do this full-time. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I'm not there yet. I have a full-time job that pays the bills, so to speak.
Yeah.
But eventually, I'd like to be able to do this full-time.
Great. I hate to spring this on you, but could you read something from the book?
Yeah, absolutely. About how long would you like me to go for?
We've got plenty of time, so okay. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, of course. So sure, I'm going to read. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to read a little bit of my favorite story in the book, which is the first one. And it's called The Weeds and the Wildness Yet. And this was a story that I workshopped in a class with Stephen Graham Jones. So it kind of got his stamp of approval, and I'm really pleased with that. The irony is that his wife loves the dirt. How many times over the past 42 years has Charlie watched her out in the garden, massaging the earth with her fingers? Mildred's tomatoes and peppers are blue ribbon winners come fair time. Her lilies and caladiums, the envy of every woman in the neighborhood. She knows every gardening trick in the book. How to control aphids with sticky tape. How to squat on an upturned bucket to avoid back pains. How to scrape her nails over a bar of soap to prevent dirt from caking underneath. But Charlie, he's always found dirt, well, dirty. He hates the musty smell of the stuff, that suffocating feeling on his skin. Of course, his dislike intensifies the morning he finds her lying face down in the garden. As long as he lives, he'll never forget how the dirt behaves when he turns her over, the way it clings to the whites of her eyes, the bloody clump of mud that burps out of her nostril. The grit even manages to creep into his mouth when he's trying to breathe life back into her, calling out to God to please bring her back for one more moment. Please. But God doesn't work that way. Not in real life.
Wow. I love the detail in that. It's a very vividly drawn. So that's great. I can't wait to read more.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you mind if I ask you how your sexuality affects your work?
Sure. I can't say that it directly has influenced my work. I didn't start writing until I became out and became comfortable in my own skin. Because I think back in the day, I was maybe hiding who I was and not being honest about a lot of things, not being honest about my desire to become a writer. It took me a really long time to deal with my sexuality, with being an out gay man. And I'm now in a married relationship of over 20 years. I've been with the same person. Happy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. He's in this room. You guys can't see him, but he's always with me, and that's a good thing. But my sexuality certainly has influenced a lot of the stories. I'm not necessarily a gay writer, but there are some gay situations in the book. Maybe four or five stories deal with gay themes or gay characters. Like even in the story that I just read, the main character's brother is gay. And I think I probably brought some of my dealings with my own brothers into that story. So
excellent. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us today. It's been very, really interesting. And, it's always good to see someone come back to the TXK.
Yeah, man, it's a pleasure to be back. I haven't been back here in about a year, but it's fun to be at the Gazette. I used to read the Gazette growing up as a kid when we actually had paper kids.
Right.
We had to actually unfold the paper, and I started with the funny pages always, but came to respect the Gazette as an entity in Texarkana. So it's such a thrill to be back. And Carl, thank you for having me in for the interview.
My pleasure. On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Follow On the Line on our website, texarkanagazette.com/podcast. To support the show, post a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. And please, spread the word by sharing a link or telling a friend. I write, produce, and edit the show, and I'd love to hear from you. Email me at krichter@texarkanagazette.com and let me know what you think. I'll see you next time on the line.